ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I'm David Marr, host of Late Night Live on Radio National, where nothing's off limits.
You know, part of being an adult is dealing with discomfort.
We gather the sharpest minds around to hash over what's shaping this crazy world.
Both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party succumbed to big money.
Late Night Live, four new shows a week on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Once upon a time, drones were the stuff of science fiction.
Now, they're revolutionising war,
giving smaller countries like Ukraine a fighting chance,
while also undermining the strength and power of conventional militaries, like the US in its fight with Iran.
On this episode, you'll step into the future of warfare at a secret location right here in Australia, where they're taking the fight to killer drones.
I'm Geraldine Doogue.
I'm Hamish McDonald. Let's go roaming. Well, when we talk about the global military buildup in today's world, Geraldine, I think the one feature that is quite different, there are a lot of things about it that's much the same as has been in the past, particularly the geography, but drones certainly mean that wars are being fought in different ways.
Yes, it certainly does. And look, it all goes to, there are so many implications about, yes, it's changing war. Yes, it's changing how we think about what we should spend our money on in Australia, that whole discussion about resilience that David Kilcullen introduced to us, that our listeners have loved. And I heard it the other day in the interview that Latika and I did with Peter Pomerantsev, who's a leading Ukrainian commentator on where the war is at the moment. And he had this amazing, at the very end of our conversation, almost as an afterthought, about just how the Ukraine's understanding of drones, countering Russian drones, is changing so much. Let's have a listen.
The drones have changed the nature of warfare. You know, you can't do the classic breakthrough, like massing your forces and like steaming in, because drones just sort of just like, they kind of swarm any big breakthrough. Also because the Ukrainian military industry is now one of the sort of miracle growth industries in the world. So they have a little bit of money coming in from that.
I mean, it's sort of odd, isn't it, a way to talk about miracle industries growing out of warfare. But it's true. The Ukrainians, by rebutting the Russian drones, they've learned an enormous amount. They're now being sought out, particularly by the Gulf countries, UAE, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia. So what we're really going to look at today is how that is playing out in Australia.
Yeah, because the Australian government recently announced that it's investing between $12 and $15 billion over the next decade in drones and autonomous systems. And I think it's worth keeping in mind that we're not just talking about the little things you see flying up above the park or the beach. The aerial drones are now very sophisticated, some of them very large, but also some of them micro. There's also on-water drones, as in drones being launched from the water, but also underwater drones. And that's, you know, posing a lot of other questions about AUKUS, for example. What's the value of investing these hundreds of billions of dollars in nuclear-powered submarines if underwater drone technology is going to change the game entirely? Now, there's lots of arguments around that because I think, as we've mentioned before, the AUKUS-class submarine is said to be capable of carrying and deploying underwater drones. That's certainly the case that we heard made from the head of the Submarines Agency when we spoke to them. And particularly of interest for this episode is that part of that federal government investment in drone tech is $7 billion that's going to go towards counter-drone technology. Mm. Because, of course, it's not just arming yourself with the drones and having that capability. It's also about making sure that you can respond if they're suddenly swarming your skies, your critical infrastructure, your borders.
The whole sort of supposedly, you know, the strategy behind this enormous amount of money that Richard Marles, the Defence Minister, announced recently is this strategy of denial as the cornerstone of our planning, so that we're going into active projection, not just defensive, that an island trading nation that guarantees our lifestyle has to be defended well beyond our coastline, and that you've got to hold adversaries at bay at much greater ranges than ever before. So that's the whole idea behind this.
But do you know, like a few years ago, Australia's military had no drones.
No, I know. I know. It's absolutely phenomenal, which is what Peter Pomerantsev kept saying that to us in this interview that he did with the Ukrainian. It's just changing so fast. And the question is, are we catching up? This year, the Russians are expected to build 5 million drones and the Ukrainians 4.5 million. Now, so they're setting the pace, and now we're seeing it play out in the Middle East as well.
So on this episode, we're going to take you inside the warehouse, the manufacturing plant of a company that's based here in Australia. I can't tell you the precise location other than that it's in Sydney. And this is a company that's building counter drone technology, critical piece of the puzzle. There's a really interesting corporate dimension to this story, which Geraldine, I know you're going to get to in a moment. But first, let's just go for a little walkthrough.
You can just grab one of these, a yellow vest for work health and safety reasons.
Yep,
I can. There's forklifts and things that run around here at times, and we don't want you to get squashed. We're now in basically the production facility, which includes the warehouse and a whole bunch of different rooms here that we put these products together.
It sort of looks like a big, big super soaker.
Yes, a big super soaker, full of electrons, basically. But we're a bit famous for these because we're pretty much one of the first companies to produce a drone gun back in about 2018-19, before all this, you know, drone problem started. And it's been refined since then. It's basically fairly low weight, about just over 5-6 kilos there, battery operated, can jam multiple patrol links, and very, very simple to use. And basically it works out of the box, which is also fairly impressive. Once you put the battery on and turn the safety guard off, you've got actually a device that will break those control links on most drones.
All right, let's keep going. Just to describe this for listeners, it's a pretty hefty looking tripod. It looks maybe like a little, some kind of device that would be used by surveyors, but it's got something akin to a pizza oven sitting on top of it. Is that a fair description?
Yeah, sort of a pizza oven on top. That's a 45 kilo. That is the actual drone Sentry. And of course, this mounting equipment, that might be a roof rack. So we might put it on the roof rack of a vehicle. We do put it on utility vehicles, small vessels, and these sort of things, tanks, armoured vehicles. It's all designed to protect the location and the vehicles and vessels that it's mounted on. What's really important here, and I think in the context of the Ukraine war, it's designed to counter first-person view attack drones. So they're the drones that do sneak up on you, do, you know, pop out over the top of the bushes, so to speak. Once this gets the signal of that and it's got the jammer integrated to it, it can be set into automatic defeat mode and jam that signal so that first-person view attack drone cannot actually, you know, get to you as the target. So we'll go out that way.
Yep. Can I touch it?
Certainly.
Yeah, okay. Oh, it's not that heavy at all.
No, it's not that heavy.
You can hold it with a single hand. I could just point this up at a drone in its general vicinity and, take it out.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you can put that, basically, there's like a cone of electronic noise that will come out of the front of the gun there. Once you turn it on and squeeze that trigger, it will then basically send that noise out, and it's sort of like shouting down the signal of the drone. So the drone starts to lose the reception of its control signal because the noise that you're producing with this device is higher than the signal that it is getting. So you are shouting out of the drone out of the sky electronically.
Well, there you go, Jerry.
It's all so clear to me now. Who is that, Hamish?
So that's Terry Van Heeren, who we're about to sit down with. He's the Vice President of Drone Shield, the head of strategy. And I think for listeners, maybe if you could spend a moment just explaining the corporate intrigue that surrounds this particular company, because it's made a lot of headlines, not all for the right reasons.
No, and I would think it's fair to say at the moment it's rebuilding its reputation. It was the best performing stock on the ASX last year. It went up fourfold. I mean, this is quite extraordinary since January until November 2025, amidst high drama, the then CEO, Oleg Vornik, and its chairman, Peter James, suddenly sold down all their shares that had been distributed to them, legitimately performance related. They made millions of dollars out of it, but the share price crashed and the financial press absolutely poured over it. And look, I won't go into all the details, but certainly it had a bit of a whiff around it. It wasn't what that whole business about the ASX, which is that every investor knows as much as every other investor. There's nobody behind the scenes with extra special information. They have now changed. The CEO and the chairman have stepped down. New people have been appointed. But I suppose the important thing to say to listeners, this is one of several companies. Their main competitors are companies in Denmark and the US. And their share price has gone up again. A lot of retail investors are in, but the institutions and the experienced investors have stood back. Now, you can draw your conclusion of what that is, but we're meeting a company that is rebuilding itself with new personnel and the material that we're about to talk about.
So, Terry, tell me where all of this stuff goes. What are you actually sending out into the world?
We are sending out a range of drone detection and mitigation products to up to 100 countries all around the world. It's going to militaries and police forces, basically end users that have a license to operate this equipment. And, you know, we've actually grown a very big market over the last decade or so. But the demand, as we were talking about as we were walking through the production facility, is going up quite quickly because of the events that are occurring around the world.
How do drones change the way a war is fought?
Well, I think drones, you know, you look at the drone as a marriage of a whole bunch of different technologies which are changing very quickly. So the technologies such as motors, electric motors getting more powerful, you can fly further, carry more payload, batteries, increase range and endurance. The sensors, the little sensors we've got in our cameras make a drone more powerful because you can observe more from a simple drone. And then the control systems and other things are changing quite quickly. Once you put all that together and you've got a drone, then it's really the human takes over and goes, well, how can I use this thing for my advantage and how can I use it in a nefarious way and ending conflict? So the human innovation is just as important, I think, as the technical innovation, because the users have to experiment and go, look, I could do this, I can do that. If I try this, this will happen. How about we, you know, try and use these things to control ground? How about we diversify them into the maritime and the ground environment? And this sort of human slash technical innovation takes over and is really driving the big changes we see today.
I think what you're referring to is the Ukraine conflict and then the situation in Iran. Is it fair to observe that at a kind of macro level, drones have enabled the smaller power in a conflict to undermine the conventional, much larger military? Is that a simple way of
saying
it?
Well, that is. I think that's, you know, the Ukraine example there is about those human operators, those war fighters going, well, if I use this drone, I can solve some of these problems and I can reduce risk to self. So they do. And they've been real drivers of some of this innovation.
But if you look at Iran as an example, right, you've got the world's biggest military, the United States, best armed, biggest aircraft carriers, every missile under the sun. Iran's withstood the onslaught much better than most expected. Is that because of drones?
Well, they've certainly had a reprisal capability because of drones, and they've basically taken their drone plans and, you know, the Shahid capabilities and deployed them at large, very, very large numbers, very, very large numbers, and that causes a problem in itself. So that's and that's a metric, you know, use of drone capabilities. And this is really what is changing, I suppose, underlying all these technologies. The ability to produce a drone at very low cost in very high numbers and deploy them extensively for basically to create mass is a strategic effect in itself. Go back to the start of the Ukraine war, there was like four nations were using smaller drones. Now there's 40 or more. So it really has taken off because every country around the world is thinking, well, I can use drones more and more and more. They're low cost, they're scalable in numbers, and I can solve a lot of problems by just using them in an innovative fashion.
It's pretty interesting because I guess we fear that we're a bit exposed if something were to happen here. It sounds like we might be more exposed than we need to be.
Yeah, hopefully we're not strategically surprised, you know, anytime soon. People need to realise that drones are a wonderful thing. I've got a couple of home for hobbies. People use them in agriculture, mining, you know, if you want to get your house surveyed for real estate, whatever, people use drones. There's millions of drones in this country being used for a whole bunch of good reasons. But of course, that means there's also lots of drones around that can be used for surveillance and nefarious type activities. So the capability, the drone itself, it's here. It's not going anywhere. It's easy to get. I could buy one through online, through Amazon or whatever.
Should we have to register the sale of drones, just like civilian use drones, so that we know who's got them?
It's sort of like trying to register your phone there, because they're that usable, right, for commercial reasons,
so
for private reasons,
yeah.
But, of course, you know, you can turn that technology around and use it in a nefarious way as well. I put it this way. I think in 10 years' time, I'm getting my pizza from Domino's via drone at home.
You think that'll happen?
Why not? It's the technology's there. They're just going to get organised to do it. It becomes a productivity thing, right? You know, you end up getting more efficiency in your economy when you start using these systems.
You have to listen to drones above your head all the time.
That's a problem. They don't really sound that much. But that then means...
I don't know. I don't agree with that. I can't stand the sound of a drone.
Well,
I go hiking in the national parks and there's a drone in the national park, which isn't even allowed.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, but you can hear it a mile off.
Yeah, but, you know, this is possible, I suppose. What I'm trying to say is potentially around cities in the future, we're going to see drones being used for all different sorts of reasons, you know, delivering the mail, who knows. Technology is going in that direction. The other side of the coin is that, okay, at least you've got to monitor what's going on. You need to be able to regulate it. And, of course, if it's these technologies are being used in a nefarious form, well, then you want to do something about it, and especially around critical infrastructure. So I think this journey started, the genie's out of the bottle, so to speak, and now it's a matter of response and resources and, you know, hopefully, well, we're a willing partner, basically, in that journey.
I'm Geraldine Doogue with Hamish McDonald here on Global Roaming, and we're speaking with Terry Van Haren. He's the Vice President of Drone Shield. It's one of the Australian companies really doing well by developing technology to combat drones.
The AFP, the state police forces, are they taking up this equipment?
Yes, I won't speak too, you know, directly about what they do, but they certainly see this as a problem, and we're engaged with a number of police forces here in Australia and around the world. It's surprising, like in the United States, their biggest border problem at the moment is drones, you know, on the southern border. It's not so much people coming in.
What, because they're flying drugs in? Or?
Well, they're flying drones in for delivering drugs and contraband and surveillance, and so there's drones all along the southern border as an example of how drones can be used in a nefarious fashion. You know, I'm sure there's drones being used to get things off boats on shore here as well. You just have to have a creative mind about how you could use a drone to achieve something you want to do. And a drone becomes a tool, which means that, you know, you're less exposed, you have a bit of capability there that, you know, can be used in a nefarious way. So as I keep saying, you can't really... How do you monitor this, firstly? How do you control it, secondly? And how do you respond to it if it's causing you harm or, you know, affecting what you're doing is the third layer.
Yeah. Do you sell to anyone?
No, we, it depends on the product. So we have export control products where we will sell to users through an export control license. They're our control products. And we do have some products there that we will sell to various customers without that overhead. It's typically depending on the type of technology we're talking about.
But in effect, the Australian government can determine where the bulk of your products go.
For our export control products, so those products that actually have mitigation capabilities especially, but typically we're selling many products to similar customers and similar networks. So these things come up together.
What about Russia, China, Iran? Could your products end up in their hands?
Well, my short answer was no, and that's because they're on the sanction list. And so we can't, and no company can export to those countries.
But could they be bought by another party and then end up in those places, or would the software not work? How would you prevent them using it?
We do track where our products end up and end up having a relationship with the companies and institutions using them. So it's not beyond the, you know, the possible that they lose control of those devices, and hopefully they tell us. But we basically do track, you know, where our products end up and who's using them.
Are there countries that might surprise us that do buy them?
There's a lot of little countries that have these problems. In fact, we've got a bit of success protecting presidents and government officials with their security details, especially the light handheld devices. They're very popular with those sort of countries. So a lot of little countries all around and kingdoms, you know, to become clients in that matter.
Obviously, there's been huge interest in Drone Shield, and in particular, the sell-off of $70 million worth of shares by the former CEO and chairman. Was that a smart move? A lot of people raised a lot of doubt about this company that's had a lot of people like hitherto excited.
I won't really comment too much on that. A lot of the announcements and reasons were listed through the ASX. The timing, I suppose, wasn't the best, maybe, and I'm not sure it was really coordinated, but it's indicative of our growth cycle, I suppose. On the public company front, it's a funny world because we're living in a world which is changing quite quickly. The market's changing very quickly. So our investors are reacting to the bow wave of these world events as well.
There's more interest, more investment every time there's a spike like the
Well,
Iran
there
conflict.
Is, yeah. When, after Operation Spiderweb, the Ukrainian Secret Service attack on the Russian airfields, there was quite a spike. A lot of growth there in the share price. Same thing happened about 6 months later when the European nation said we need to have a drone wall on the eastern flank of Western Europe. And, of course, that was a policy announcement, and it will take some time to resource that. But, again, there was a bow wave of excitement, if you like, in the investment world. So these things are sort of part of the course in some respects as a ASX 200 listed company now. But, our shareholders, I think, understand that we're a leading technology company in a growing market that keeps reinvesting in ourselves and our products.
It just made it look a bit shaky.
Well, it did. That's what I'm saying is it's a very sensitive market because there's a lot of unknowns about what is counter-drone and what is our place in the counter-drone market. Of course, there's personal reasons involved, so I won't go into those. But, yeah, maybe timing wasn't the best.
Are you doing much in the maritime space? Because that's obviously come up a lot during the Iran conflict. I know there's questions about whether the AUKUS-class submarines would be able to deploy drones. Does your stuff work underwater or on water?
We're basically from the surface of the Earth up, because that's where the RF playground is, if you like.
The radio frequency.
Radio frequency playground. The control links are typically via those means. So we have, marinized our products and made sure that they'll work on vessels. We have a few of sales of that Drone Sentry X Mark II to nations that are operating small vessels and stuff like that. But this is going to become an important market. And I think we're starting to talk to not so much the navies of the world. I think they will be eventually get to the point where they realise they need a lot of additional counter-drone protection. But some of the commercial operators, and in fact, commercial operators are fairly easy to deal with if you can talk to them, get access to them, show your product. And then they have a genuine demand that they'll spend the money and make things happen. There's different levels of drones as well in terms of small, medium, large, these sort of things. So the technology sort of has to fit the purpose and the environment, but there is plenty changing in that area at the moment.
I was reading your prospectus about the future. There's a section there about the threats and solutions that might be forthcoming. Some of the threats that you outline are biologically inspired drones, small drones mimicking birds and insects that would be harder to detect and could bypass the current sensing capabilities, and then also cyber autonomous drones that operate entirely disconnected from external command and control, which presumably means they're harder for you to detect.
Yeah, look, this world is now changing quite quickly. That's the drone technology world. And
does that sort of stuff already exist?
It does, yes. I've seen, some reports of very small bird-mimicking drones being tested in places like China. What they call last-mile autonomy is actually being fielded in Ukraine at the moment. So that's when a drone will automatically lock onto a target and then it just doesn't listen to the control links anymore. It's basically going to attack that target regardless, unless it's to try and get around electronic detection and things like that. What we have done is we talk about our products, but we also do integrate or create interoperable solutions with radars and optics and acoustic sensors and give you a multi-sensor sort of solution. And that's important when you need to cater for some of these emerging threats and different ways of drones operating, because honestly, it's, again, the spectrum of technologies behind drone and uncrewed systems is changing quite rapidly.
What about civilian infrastructure, the threat that drones pose there? Like, I'm thinking about when we might go to a footy game or a big event at a stadium. Might they be targeted by drones and could we respond?
Yeah, well, we think that's a real problem set. I mean, that's a growing problem all around the world. The reality is there with, you know, certain events occurring all around the world. Here in Australia, it's sort of been recognised now by Home Affairs. There's a review of the Security of Critical Infrastructure Act that talks about having to think about drone protection on all our critical infrastructure and events. So this is an area which we've got products for. We've actually simplified some of our technologies. I didn't show you, but it was a demilitarised product. It had a very simple product which you put on, say, at a stadium, you add power, you add internet, log in via the cloud, and now you've got a drone detection device that you can use basically to surveil and make sure you don't have any drone activities around an event.
Can Australia be up with the curve or ahead of the curve on any of this stuff? Like, you know, you're describing what China's doing. It does sound mildly terrifying. Well, can we keep up in this space?
Well, we are spending a lot of time and effort to keep up. We're an Australian company, but we're actually globally focused, completely globally focused, 95% exports, 5%, you know, sales here in Australia. So we've got a US team who represent us there, but of course they look at that threat environment, they give us guidance on the technologies and products we need to provide, you know, the US and North America in a sense. We've got a European team as well now in the Netherlands and people all around the world. So it's important that we are well deployed and understand the environment and, more importantly, the changes in the threat spectrum and also what the operators expect. And we come back here and our very smart engineers spend long hours to come up with solutions and basically design them, test them and then field them.
Terry Van Horen, thank you very much.
Thank you, Hamish.
Well, there you have it from the horse's mouth, Terry Van Horen, clearly a man who enjoys his work, the Vice President of Drone Shield.
Geraldine, should we do some feedback?
I think we should. Look, we had a lovely email from Ian Kitney about our discussion about Japan, which actually we got a lot of feedback from people. I've been living in Japan, he says, for 15 years now, and have enjoyed being surprised at not only the obvious differences, but the similarities between Japanese and Australian culture. The thing is that the vast majority of people here are either politically uninterested or, at the extreme, willfully ignorant of what's happening in their parliament. It's not the Japanese people who will steer their ship through these interesting times, but one woman's will, desire and drive to change the constitution, stir up hornets' nests and stamp her hardline right-wingery onto history. She will do and has already alienated China within the first 3 weeks of her new job. All this despite the people, not as a mandate. I write all this after an hour of grass cutting and preparing the fields for the summer vegetables. If I've learned one thing from living and farming here, it's that time and life is not a straight line. It's a cycle, one that I hope does not return to a Japan of the previous century. Your kind regards, Ian Kitney.
What a beautiful email.
It's really that. Thank you, Ian. Beautiful email.
Top marks, I think, you're getting from Geraldine Doog on that. Please keep the correspondence coming, global.roaming@abc.net.au. Thanks to our producers on this episode, Jesse Kay, Aston Brown and Kylie Gray. We'll be back with the next instalment of our Indonesia Rising mini-series on Monday. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.